Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. And start of hour two, about 10 minutes in. And I'm going to have at least a couple of conversations here in the next little while about Barry. And I had to, you know, think about it over the, you know, the weekend, how to, you know, how to best handle, you know, the passings of two people that have contributed so much to the game. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we've had, you know, shows that have gone all 3 hours, and other times, you know, we've kind of woven some visits in, and we're going to do it that way the next few days. And unfortunately, I've had to reach out to Ron Anderson on multiple occasions for this kind of a conversation. And Ron's stature in the game, and particularly the time he spent on the West Coast, plenty of time spent with Barry, and anybody that got to spend time with Barry appreciates it, and we'll always appreciate it. Ron, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You deal with a lot of horsemen, Ron, and I mean that's your trade. What made Barry so special?
Barry had a unique way of really just touching people. His horsemanship was, as good as probably anybody, but he just had a really kind spirit to him that, you know, he reached out to the kings and the paupers, I mean, the everyday people, and he just was really, really different. When you work on the racetrack in a competitive business, and most of the time, no one likes everyone. There isn't anybody that didn't like Barry Abrams. Over the years, a guy claim a horse, and this, I don't like that guy, he did this, he did that. No one likes everybody. Everybody liked Barry. He was so, so special. The other thing that people really don't understand is it's a bit of a blessing, because he really, really suffered for a long time. He was so sick. He got to a point quite a while back where he could barely talk. And last year at Breeders' Cup, the highlight of the week for me was not winning with Uni and not winning with Confefe, but my win with Morforzo with Joel, and walking to the winner's circle and hugging Barry. He held me for a good, 15 seconds, 20 seconds. And Stevie, he was trembling, and I was an absolute wreck. And I left that winner's circle and that hug, and I said to Nancy, I said, you know, he's not going to be around very long. He was so just, you know, just wilting in my hands, in my arms. And I felt so bad leaving there. But that was my highlight. Fortunate enough to win two Breeders' Cup. But to win that race for Barry that meant so much to him and all the years that I've known him. And like I said, you know, you Jewish have a word called, I believe it's called a mensch. He was a mensch. It's the way, as I understand the word, which is not thrown around lightly. That was Barry Abrams. Just a special person, special guy.
I referenced the Mo 4's win and the glee that it produced, and what a special scene it was, you know, down there at you know the winner's circle. And the funny thing, Ron, he pulled out his phone and he said, "You got to look at this. Look," and he pulled out the text that he had sent to you about arranging, you know, that Joel was going to ride Mo Forza when he was ready.
Oh.
And he showed me the text. He said, "Look what I sent Ron."
He had reached out, and in a brief conversation, he told me, he said, I got a really special grade one horse. And, you know, you hear people that are optimistic, you know, like Charlie Whittingham told me many, many years ago, optimists in this business do well and pessimists don't. And he was so optimistic about this horse being special, and just a special horse, but a really special person. And, you know, I thought it was a little ironic last night with the Lakers winning the championship, because I don't know if people realize Barry was really close with the ownership and the management of the Lakers for years, the buses, and knew the boss very well. And he would go to Laker games for many, many years. I would say he attended at least, I don't know, 20, 30 Laker games every year. And I thought it was just so sad that he passed away right after they lost the other night. He couldn't realize that they won the championship, because he was a diehard Laker fan, and sad that he passed away just after they got beat the other night.
A little more about Joel and their relationship and you know Barry's part. I mean, Barry's got a hand in so many different success stories, and whether they're success stories that result in you know wins of a horse, or the success of someone's career, or if it's a much quieter anonymous success, and you know there's all different, you know, there were all different kinds of influence that he had in people's lives, and you know, in terms of, you know, being charitable, but I don't know the specifics of how instrumental you know Barry was in Joel getting started.
Steve, I didn't have Joel at the time. I was on the East Coast with Jerry Bailey and then Garrett Gomez, and I know, you know, Barry kind of took Joel under his wing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he endorsed him big time and rode him on a lot of horses. And, you know, my famous story about somebody else that endorsed him, who was my dear, dear friend, was Bobby Frankel. And Bobby had said, "You better watch this guy." I said, "Who is he?" He was riding in Northern California. "You better watch this guy. You might be working for him someday." So Barry was along the same lines as Bobby. He could recognize a talent very, very quickly, and they both used Joel extensively and had a lot of success. But Barry was, you know, Barry was a gentle giant. He was so nice with everybody, and so such a racetracker. You know, you mentioned He was, when you look up Race Tracker, which we all are, you're going to see Barry's picture, because he was, all in all, a race tracker. He was a horse trainer. He was a mentor to many people. He was a gambler. He was, you know, all the above, just a real racetrack person, which, you know, our world, like I say, when you speak to somebody on the outside and they say, well, what days are you off? You say, well, off Monday and Tuesday. And people look at you like you got two heads. So we're in a different world, and Barry was very much just a true racetrack person and personality.
Yeah, the part that is pretty amazing too, and we'll get this you know, as the week goes on, and when we talk to the standardbred side, is, you know, his origins on the harness end of things, and he's one of these people that, you know, has got essentially two parallel track careers, and it's just amazing how people, Ron, you know, a certain set of people appreciating Barry immediately started talking about Unusual Heat and you know, the horses on the West Coast, and then there's a whole separate entity, a whole separate roster of people talking about Guts and you know, his standard bred days. It's amazing.
Well, he, you know, he was famous in the standard bred industry before he showed up at the Santa Anita, and I'm not sure if the horse's name was, but
Guts.
He was famous for claiming a horse and making like over $1 million back when you couldn't make that kind of money. So he claimed horse, and I believe he either owned the whole thing, the whole horse, or he owned most of it. So he was well established as a horseman way before he came to California and came to the thoroughbred industry.
Now, and that side of it, you know, we've got a couple of different people that we can't get to. Anthony Quartarolo today. Anthony's got a doctor's appointment, but we reached out to Larry Letterman, who I think we can expect to join us, and you know, the harness circle, as well as the standardbred side, and you know, you talk about the better side. I mean, the table. I said to Jay Privman over the weekend, Ron, that they should put like a plexiglass box over that table at Clocker's Corner between the passings of Mel Studi and Henry Moreno and now Barry. No one should be allowed to sit at that table ever again.
It's been a rough few months, that's for sure. This whole generation of icons, or, you know, people that we all looked up to and revered for many years, the stories and the history and the of all the horses and all the good that they've done, it's just been a rough go.
There's no doubt it's too many. We've had too many of these conversations, but this frankly, between this and you know, Saturday morning and then hours later, Paul Pompa, which was a, you know, just a stunning and shocking, you know, that it's just too much. You wonder, Ron, I mean, how much you know, how much are you supposed to endure?
Yeah. Bad weekend, rough weekend, that's for sure for a lot of us on both coasts.
Well, and on the, at least on the racing side, for you and for Joelle, a nice weekend. We just talked to Steve Asmussen about Jackie's Warrior, and and haven't reached Shug yet, but we'll have Shug to talk about civil union. So you're and then there's, you know, whatever Johnny's got lining up, certainly no shortage of options, but it feels like you'll have very nice sets of lineups when we get to Keeneland.
Yeah, we're looking forward to Keeneland and Breeders' Cup weekend very much. Between Gamin and Authentic for Johnny would be the two highlights so far. And then Joel's got multiple chances, of which you touched on Jackie's Warrior. Just looks like something quite different. The most amazing thing to me was, you know, coming off the really fast and quick race at Saratoga and the Hopeful, how he was so rateable. And Joel's got some crazy, amazing hands of all the guys I've worked for. He's just crazy how great his hands are. But to get this horse to go the first quarter of a mile in 23-1 was just kind of like awe for me. I was like, really? And then the way he did it, just a special animal. And it sounds like Steve and Scotty and all say he's just a super cool, neat horse that is easy to be around. And, you know, he's like Steve mentioned, he's got the right mind to be, you know, a really, really good horse. So, looking forward to him. And, you know, Tom DeCanto running in the Classic, who's, you know, obviously one of the choices, and will have a huge look amongst others. So we're gearing up, as we all do, for our marquee Super Bowl days. It's exciting this time of the year. This is what we work for all year. So lucky enough to be able to participate with some good chances with both guys.
Well, Ron, I appreciate the visit. There'll certainly be a lot of rooting going on when Mo Forza lines up in the mile. Won't be easy, but he'll be 3-5 in people's hearts.
Oh, for sure, Steve. I just hope everybody that wasn't fortunate enough to know Barry, that the end of your tribute, which could go on for days,
yeah,
that's how many people you could reach out to. But the people that didn't know him or just knew him by his name, you just need to realize what an amazing person he was, and an amazing character that he was too. Somebody that I treasure knowing him for the rest of my life. He was just different.
That's going to be echoed by everybody that visits to pay tribute to Barry Abrams. And we're going to talk to Richard Baltus next, who worked under Barry. And Ron, I hate that I have to reach out to you for these, but your insight and your appreciations are always invaluable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. You take care.
Ron Anderson, the first of what will be a parade of tributes and appreciations. Richard Baltus joins us as well, and Richard worked with Barry. Richard, it's one of those situations where you know that it brings peace after a tremendous battle and after tremendous suffering, but everyone's appreciation of Barry, you know, makes it hard to accept.
yeah, Barry. Barry, obviously Barry was a wonderful man, and like I always tell people, Barry was always looking out for the people less fortunate than himself, and he was always willing to help people. And you know, I happen to be one of those people that he helped, and I was in Louisiana, and my wife was working in Santa Anita or to Hollywood Park, and I was like, man, I wanted to come back to California. So Barry offered me a job as an assistant trainer, and he basically just asked me what I wanted to make. And, you know, I came to work for him, and he was battling cancer at the time, but he was still doing really well. And then, he had a second cancer surgery after about a year after I started working for him. And funny story, because there's a story about Barry when he went in for the second surgery, and it was surgery day, and I like, had a phone call and said, Barry Abrams, and like, got to be his wife. You know, it's got to be his wife. And I answered the phone, and it was Barry. He had his phone as he was getting wheeled out of the surgery. He said, I made it. And I just started going, oh, my God, only Barry could do that. But, Barry, he fought a long, hard battle, and he was valiant, never complained, never bitched once about being sick, you know. He was a guy that loved to eat, and he couldn't eat, really, for the last 10 years of his life. Mm. And, he took me to the Lakers game. He did a lot of nice things for me and my wife. I remember one time it was like my anniversary, and he's like, I'm going to take a couple of days. He said, yeah, go. So the next thing I know, he sends me to Vegas, gets me a hotel room, a flight, gets me a show. And, you know, things like that, like Barry just did things, you know, like he always was a kind-hearted guy, and, you know, he's just one of those good guys on the racetrack that no one really can say anything bad about. You know, he was just a good man, and had a lot of strength. And, he's going to be missed. I mean, sorely missed, but I think this last time he fell and he broke his neck, and that was the end of it. But he was loved by many, many, many people.
Richard, talk a little bit too about his horsemanship, and I don't know how many. I don't know how many people have been so successful where we see plenty of quarter horse trainers transition to thoroughbred. The number of guys that come from the standardbred side and have, you know, a similar level of success, it doesn't seem to be as interchangeable. And,
he had these different ideas that would work for him. You know, like he would run horses back kind of quickly.
Yes.
And he was like, well, I can make money racing them. Why do I want to work? You know, he had a vision. I mean, you know, he did, like when he claimed unusual heat, and you know, I think the horse was, you know, had a tendon when he claimed him, and but he had a tremendous pedigree, and he bred his mares to him. When he put his own money up, he bred his mares to him, and you know, I got to say something, that Unusual Heat was probably, everybody knows he's probably one of the greatest stallions in California, and now he's becoming a great broodmare sire too as well, multiple grade one winners, you know, as a broodmare sire. And he had different ideas, and it worked for him. You know, I think I've worked for a lot of horsemen that are very, very good horsemen. Everybody that is successful, you can learn from, and I did learn some things from Barry. But most of all from Barry, it was just good human being with a kind heart. And, you know, I remember, you know, he used to love the Lakers. We went to the Lakers game one day, and he's like, he knew everybody there. He knew where to go, you know, go to the suite and know where to get the dessert table. I mean, it was just unbelievable. The guy was like, he was amazing. He was a lot of fun, you know, fun guy. And, you know, the Lakers won the championships the very last night, I think. And Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many areas that can be discussed. You bring up unusual heat, and you know, he. How many people over the last little while, the last you know, decade plus, Richard, can you recall being at Clocker's Corner, and there's Barry with the Manila envelope showing the unusual heat. The backstory and the Hungarian the Hungarian fourth dam or whatever, and all the things that, you know, I can think of him, you know, teaching me and showing me all, you know, and just great.
He always had a wealth of knowledge, as you know. He loved to play the horses. He loved to read the sheets. He really was I remember when I was working for him, I was like, Barry, you know, he loved to play the horses. You know, it was like, he was still like, he was going, like, he's going down in horses, and it was just, I was just like, this guy just loves the game. He loves the game. You know, so, I mean, he was there for, even when he wasn't at the barn, he was there, at, you know, on the front side, or playing the races, or he did a lot of good things, you know, did a lot of nice things for people, and everybody loved the guy, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a great legacy to leave to people, you know, I mean, survived by his daughters and, you know, and his grandkids and his wife, and, you know, one thing about Barry, no one had anything bad to say about the guy, you know?
No. No.
Great guy.
When you talk about the racetrack and the love of the game and the atmosphere, I mean, that I thought, I think it was David Israel on Twitter, after I put something up, David had a couple of terrific thoughts where he said, you know, he loved being a racetracker, and he loved racetrackers themselves, and he, there wasn't anything about the game and the lifestyle that he didn't have a passion for and enthusiasm for, and, you know, it was infectious, and you know, if it seemed like, Richard, if somebody was down, whether it was down on their luck or just down, you know, or it had a couple of bad turns and, you know, a bad streak, Barry would lift you up, and, you know, and help you get, whether it was back on your feet or just improve your outlook. Those kinds of people are invaluable, and you know, the racetrack's the place to find them.
Yeah. Well, you know, the racetrack is a different world, but, not many people like Barry left, so, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I've seen the guy, you know, come to work and basically pick up a guy that's really down on his luck, and he brings him to the barn and give him money, and, you know.
Yep.
He was just that kind of guy, you know. He was never, you know, he was never, like, too good for anybody. He was always looking out for the most, you know, the unfortunate guys, the guys that needed help. You know, he's always giving. You know, and that's quality that you don't really see from a lot of people. You know, he had a host of friends, believe me. A lot of people really loved Barry. Gamblers, racetrackers, you know.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to work for him, and very fortunate he was ever, you know, he was at my wedding, you know, he's just a good guy, and you know, this the sire unusual he said he had was, you know, really an amazing. It's kind of funny because there was a horse that the first day I worked for Barry Evans, this is a real quick story.
Sure.
He had a filly called Spanish Queen, and she used to flip in the paddock like she was nuts. So anyway, I was like, Barry, let me take the horse. It's my first day. You know, I've already been a trainer, assistant trainer for a bunch of people, and I grabbed the filly. And Barry, it was at Holly Park, and Barry always used to have, like, his horse had to go to the track, because he always crazy unusual heat, so his horse had to go to the track first, you know, and so I was walking the horse, and there was a horse in his way, and he's like, anyway, yelling at me, and I'm like, oh, anyway, the horse did not, we got the horse to the track, the horse was fine. It turns out that the mare, Spanish Queen, I trained her daughter. I mean, Spanish Queen was the daughter of Spanish Bunny. And Spanish, that was my, like, I think my first or second grade one winner.
Hmm.
And Spanish Bunny also produced a Spanish Love Affair, who just ran second, won her first two starts from our Cassie.
Yeah.
And she's an unusual heat mare. And she's produced, and I think her just her last baby at Keeneland sold for like $250. And unusual heat is becoming a very, very good groomer sire.
Yes. Yeah.
So you know, you kinda think of Barry every time, you know, obviously you think of Barry every time you see the unusual heat mare. Or then, you know, he's still gonna be around, you know. I own a unusual heat mare right now, and we'll see what she does.
We Cassie last week, we talked about Spanish Love Affair, and I saw Spanish Bunny was a cow bred Barry, I think, bred too, right, with the Arbax.
Yeah, Spanish Bunny is the dam of Spanish Queen and Spanish Love Affair.
Yeah.
And Spanish Bunny she was an average race horse. But she was a little bit like, you know, it's very, most of those unusual heats, they have a little bit high strung. You have to work with them mentally. And, but they're runners, you know. Spanish Bunny, you know, she was just an average racehorse, but, you know, you never thought that she would be a great broodmare, but she ended up being a great broodmare.
Well, she's got her, you know, she got Spanish Queen, who made 400,000, was her first foal by tribal rule, and now Spanish.
Yeah, I trained her, and she came in to the barn, and she was like this little skinny filly by tribal rule, and it was funny, it was like, guys that used to have horses with Barry had horses with me, and they bred her, and, Jack McCashian, and, well, this little skinny filly by tribal rule, she's kind of high strung. And then one day I go to her, she worked 58, and I put Brice Blanc on her because Brice Blanc had really good hands. He would calm her down. And anyway, she won her first start by five, and then she broke in her fourth start. And they ran her at the Belmont Oaks, and she didn't run too good that day. I think she took a bad step and a little issue, and we had to retire. But she's in. I think she's in Japan, Northern Farm. They bought her, and I think she's had some good babies too. Her, but, yeah. And then this other one, this one that Mark Cassie's got to run her.
Well, and this one is also, you know, what's amazing, and this is the unusual heat, and you know, Barry would discuss this with us when we'd visit, and it's amazing how unusual heat just seems to tick off whatever box with whoever, you know, with whatever the cross is, that doesn't seem to matter. And here's Spanish Love Affair is a Caracanti, and Spanish Queen was by tribal rule. I mean, you've got, you know, these sort of unusual unusual heat and unusual partners, and it's amazing what he's been able to do. And, you know, Barry's contribution to the stud book is you know, going to be there forever. It's another tribute to him. Yeah. Well, Richard, I appreciate this. I mean, there's so many people that, you know, we're going to feather in a few every day because, as both you and Ron Anderson echoed, there's nothing but good things to say, and there's just so many people that, you know, have, you know, appreciation for Barry, for what they, what he did for them, and in whatever small or large way.
Yeah. It touched a lot of lives, that's for sure.
Exactly. Richard Baltus, everybody. And Richard, we'll talk soon under a better backdrop.
Hey, Steve, thanks.
I appreciate it. Richard Baltus, everybody, who helped Barry helped him, and he helped Barry. That story is so emblematic of of the way Barry was. Richard Baltus wanted to get back to California from Louisiana, so he said, "How much do you want to make?" it was that simple, and he comes back to and Barry, you know, give him a job. That's the perfect example. We're going to talk. We also, as I told you, we got to talk about Paul Pompa too, and we'll do both. We're going to start, I think, now actually with Gary Siaka, who was the first person I reached out to Saturday morning, and. You know, Gary got to help Paul get started, I think, early on in the game. And, yeah, there's a lot of harmony, actually, to both Barry Abrams and to Paul Pompa. Certain ethnic kind of background and, certain... spirit and generosity, and I mean, in terms of kindness, Paul Pompa is as kind a man as you'd meet in any, in whatever way you encountered him, whether it was in his business or at the racetrack. Gary joins us now. Gary, you were the first person Saturday morning when word came, I had to reach out to you. And
hi, Steve. What a sad thing. A good guy. A real good guy. I remember he took me to Brooklyn to Bamonte's first time I went to an Italian restaurant over there.
How was he on the racetrack? How did you meet Paul originally?
I met him through Renee Araya. He trained for him.
That's right.
I had a couple of horns for him that he wanted to go bigger and this and that. But just a fun guy. Fun guy. Always asked how everything's going and. So it's just fun, just nice guy to be around, and the racetrack's definitely going to miss.
He obviously caught a wave, and Big Brown propelled him into another arena, and then he got kind of brought into the breeding side of things, and I remember having him on. It's got to be more than it's whenever. In wake of Big Brown, and he would acknowledge mistakes. I mean, he would say, I got too big, I got too many mares, and I'm going to pare back. And he was so direct and refreshing that way. He would, he would tell you just honestly what he what he felt and what he thought, and he was so. He was so generous to me. I had a problem. I'd run into a problem, and he helped me. And with coming in and taking Toy Cannon and taking a controlling interest, and it was so unfair, Gary. I mean, here's a guy who worked so hard for so long and at 62 had just sold the business, and was going to really enjoy life, and it just stolen from him. Had survived, two cancer scares? Did we lose Gary? I think we did. Case? No. No. Yeah. Either he can't hear us or we can't hear him. No. You know, and Gary mentions Renee Araya, who I had forgotten, Renee. And in fact, fairly recently, I think, right? In just the last, it might be longer ago than I'm realizing, but he got Renee on his feet and sent Renee some horses and got him, I think, back up and running. These are the kind of kindred, really kindred spirits. I hadn't made that connection until just thinking about it, but Paul Pompa and Barry. Anthony Quartarolo is going to join us too, and he's finished with the doctor, so we'll get Anthony can certainly also appreciate the the standard bred to thoroughbred connection. Because I don't know nearly as any part of Barry's standard bred experience, so I'm anxious. And I think Gary's back now. We get you back. There we go. There we go. We got the. I'm glad you mentioned Renee, because I had forgotten that, and I think Renee, you know, didn't have any horses, and Paul got him back up and running a few years ago.
Renee Araya was his first trainer.
Yeah. And it's only a few years ago that Renee was in some trouble, right? And didn't have any horses, and Paul got him rebooted.
Yeah, Paul always gave him a horse or two. Paul always done. Paul liked them.
I'm trying to think of who else besides, well, Patty Reynolds, of course, and before he got to this next layer, this next level of, you know, that after the Big Brown experience. Gary's, you know, he's one of these people that everybody, you know, everybody to a man has got nothing but nice things to say.
Nah, good guy. Good guy all around. I mean, just a good guy all around. He's always happy, always pleasant, you know, even when he was fighting cancer. I mean, yeah. Who would have thought he would have got a heart attack? I mean, he beat that. He was looking good.
Exactly. Exactly. And just get there. It's not fair. This one really not fair. You know, I just looked at Renee. I didn't realize at some point, did he claim Piazza d'Espagna?
No.
Piazza. Well, you know, it's funny. This is crazy, Gary. Renee had a Piazza d'Espagna from Chile. That's which is pretty funny. I just saw the name. You know, I'm looking through the list of Renee's best horses, but I see it's a Chilean with the same name as your Piazza. Now, I wanted to make sure that we get, you know, as many voices in as we can about Paul and Barry. Gary, I appreciate it.
No, thanks. Like I said, he's a good guy. He was even partners with us.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yes, he was.
It's a shame, you know. He's 61 years old. Man, he just sold his business not that long ago. He was going to get out and enjoy more horses. And this is what happened.
Exactly. That's just, it's,
So
we can't afford
to lose.
I know. Gary, I appreciate it.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. All right.
Gary Siaka and Gary, then they had success with a number of, I want to say, was it, Gary, you still there? No. I want to say Shotgun Scott might have been right? Shotgun Scott? Was that, I should have asked Gary about a couple of horses that, they had. There was one in particular that they made a lot of money with that they claimed fairly inexpensively, I remember, and then went on a big run. Well, we're going to get, before we take the top of the hour break, Phil Gleaves is going to join us in hour three. And before we do that, Anthony is going to join us. I'm glad to be able to get Anthony Quartarolo. And we still have got, still have got Peter Miller and others that we'll talk to about Barry. And I don't want to launch. Casey's getting Anthony now. I don't want to dive into something else and then shift gears. All right. I can mention, I can give you the rundown from Friday at Laurel until we get Anthony. Those nice Virginia bred steaks. Embolden. Mike Stidham. And Stidham actually took down two of the stakes because in addition to winning the Punchline with Embolden, he also won the Brookmead with Tasting the Stars. Trevor McCarthy aboard both. And McCarthy had a nice afternoon at Laurel on Friday because he also won with Largent for Pletcher, the Bird Allen. And then the other two stakes in the Jamestown, Dale Capuano with Jesus Ruiz wins the Jamestown. The Kenny Had a Notion. And Mike Trombetta with Virginia Beach won the Tyson Gilpin, the first of those stakes with Victor Carrasco. So that was the action at Laurel, the Virginia Breds, and we talked to Debbie Easter about on Friday. Here's Anthony Quartarolo, who joins us now. Anthony, you were one of the first people I thought of Saturday morning when I woke up and had seen the news that Barry was gone. Good morning.
It was a sad day. I'm going to miss him. He's a great guy. I know him a long time. 1976. It was 44 years.
Jesus.
Remember when he had guts and he won the Meadowlands Pace? He was a character. He was stubborn. He had his ways. Good horseman. Great guy, though. Sent me some nice horses at Belmont. I was down on horses. He sent me a bunch. We always kept in touch. I spoke to him right after his horse won the stake in Del Mar. He called me, and he actually talked to me, and he could hardly talk. And then he texted me, and he said he could hardly walk. He was using a walker, wasn't talking, and he said it was tough to even get out of bed. And then he texted me and told us a friend that was living over his apartment there in his garage had passed away, Willie. And I was talking to him. I said, "You going to make the Breeders' Cup?" He said, "I won't make it." I said, "But I'm hoping I'll be watching it." I said, "Me too, and I hope you win." And unfortunately, it didn't work out. But yeah, it's sad. It was sad. Sad for everybody. He was a loved guy.
Anthony, I don't know nearly anything about his standard bred days. I only know him as a thoroughbred horseman. Talk about those early days.
He was in the thoroughbred game. I mean, in the standardbred game, that's where I met him. I met him in 76, and he had guts. He had a three-year-old that won the Meadowlands Pace. That was a $1 million race back then, and he had some nice horses. And then I had gone to California for 5 years, and I came back in 81, and Barry was, I guess he was out on a farm or somewhere, and we kind of connected again in 85, 86. He was at a Kenny Hibbish's farm. He didn't have many horses, and he called me and he said, I had a piece of his colt, the Sun Sand colt, and he said he could sell him for me in New Zealand as a stallion. And, so I went and met with him, and I actually bought a horse off him the same day, and he got the deal done, and we sold the horse. And he said to me, "I'm getting out of here. I'm going to California, and going to try and start up in California." And I think he went to work with Roger Stein.
Yes,
out there for a while.
Yep.
And then he, he was plugging along there, and staying tough, and then he wound up making that claim, which he was just. Turned everything around for him, which he deserved. He's a hard worker. Like I said, I'm going to miss him. He's a good dude. We stayed in touch with a lot of, texting mostly because he didn't really talk. He couldn't talk. But then he told me he stopped going because he used to be at the races all the time, I'm sure you know. All the guys. He had Del Mar, Santa Anita, and then he said he wasn't even going anymore towards the end. But I was hoping for him to at least hang in there until the Breeders' Cup. But unfortunately, things happened.
I mentioned in the opening that he literally, I don't know how much he shared, with you about the family and his background, but I remember him telling me how he literally walked out of the Soviet Union as a child, essentially. The family ended up, I know they lived in Israel and I think they lived in Eastern Europe for a period before he came to the U.S. And so even his origins around about the racetrack, I'm not... I don't know. He didn't tell me how he came to the racetrack, but he was a natural. he was.
I'll tell you what. I don't. He was. He loved his family. His daughter. And his granddaughters, his little granddaughters. He used to send me pictures on his phone, and he told me that's what keeps me going. That's what's keeping me alive right now. He said, "Those two little ones keep me alive," and I thought that was great. And it's just sad, It's just a sad day, but it happens. Unfortunately, I guess he suffered for quite a while, but he was tough. He was a tough guy to go through what he went through, and he never gave up.
No,
but like I said, he will definitely be missed, and my prayers are with his family. So that's the best we can do, right?
No, no doubt, no
Sorry,
doubt.
But...
And the thing you mentioned, I just pulled up the date because I wasn't sure of it. June 10th, 1996 at Hollywood, when he reached in and took unusual heat. $80,000. Yeah. It's among the best $80,000 that's ever been spent.
Yeah, he won the shake, because Mike Mitchell was in on the horse too, and he won the shake. And what the rumor? I don't know. It was said that Mike Mitchell was going to geld the horse. He was going to geld him. That's what they were talking on TVG about. I didn't know that, and I just heard it. But you see how things work out?
Absolutely. And at that point, the horse was already, the horse was already six, actually. I mean, at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Barry was like that, though. He would take, he'd take chances. He always did. He was, you know, he liked to gamble, and, you know, he would take chances. And when he, you know, he sent me a bunch of horses at Belmont, and he would just say, run them, man, run them. We got to get checks. Just get checks. He's like, run them. I said, Barry, we just ran last week. That's all right, run them. But... yeah, anyway.
Well, and it, I mean,
yeah.
His generosity, I mean, that was that, that was so important to you at the time. I mean, it, it
you know, I was, I think at the time I had maybe had maybe 7-8 horses, and he called me and he said, I'm thinking of sending horses to New York. He said, I want to send you. And he sent 10 the first time, and then for a couple of years I always had one or two for him, and but yeah, it helped a lot, and we did good, and yeah, he was, he didn't forget. He was a good guy. He was good. He helped people if he could. He went through some hard times. I remember back in the 80s there, and that's when I went, like when I went to that farm and I saw him, and he said, I got to get out of here. I got to get to California. And he did, and thank God things worked out for the time, you know. But, so.
Anthony Cordarolo joining us. And, Anthony, I, there's, you know, there's all different, yeah, I mean, there's all different perspectives and people to, you know, to appreciate Barry, and, you know, I'm going to get some more voices over the next couple of days, but I appreciate this, and, you know, I know what, you know, what he did to help you when you were making that transition. That's when I first met you, when you first started, you know, when you first came to the Thoroughbred side.
Yeah, 1990, I switched over to the Thoroughbreds from the Standardbreds.
And never look back.
Nope.
No.
No. I love it. Love every day. It's a struggle, but you know the game. You got to keep fighting.
Exactly. And that, that's, and everybody can look to Barry for that kind of inspiration, too.
Exactly. He never gave up. Not to the day, not to the day he passed. Fought every minute.
Anthony, I appreciate it.
Thanks. Oh, thank you, Steve. Thanks for
Anthony Cordarolo. I appreciate these. You know, it's not easy for everybody to talk about. You know, it's given because he was that kind of person that, that just sort of, you know, you made a connection with if you were open for a second, if there was an opening and you got to know him, you were instantly connected to him. And he's the kind of person, Anthony, that you would hear from, you know, out of the blue, if you hadn't heard from him, if you hadn't reached out to him over a period of time, he would reach out to you.
Yeah, I was, you know, like I said, we didn't speak much. We text a lot. He would text me, like, you know, holidays and other times, and just check up on how he felt and how he was doing. And then, it was like a couple days after the Del Mar race, not the one in Santa Anita, the one in Del Mar when his colt won. And he called me, and he could hardly talk on the phone. Yeah. And he said... talked very briefly, and then he said, we're going to text, and we just texted back and forth. And then I had a text from him not too long ago, and then the word came out that he passed away. But he told me he wasn't doing good. He said he wasn't doing good at the time. But... anyway, like I say, he'll be a missed guy.
Very much.
Everybody I know that talked about him, they all loved him. He's a character.
Anthony, thank you. Stay well. And,
all right, Steve. Good to hear from you, buddy.
We'll talk again. You bet. Better circumstances next time. Anthony Quartarolo. Okay, let's take a break here, top of the hour, and we've got about 45 minutes or so, and we've got Phil Gleaves to talk to, and we'll look ahead a little bit to today's action as well, as we remember Barry Abrams, Paul Pompa, and there's more, actually, and I got quite a bit of other news to slip in. If you didn't hear earlier, or you didn't see it online earlier this morning, Enable officially retired. That seemed like it was an outside shot that she would maybe come try to close out the career in Breeders' Cup. So we got to do some enabling as well. Break here though. Hour three, about 10 minutes in. Phil Glee.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Sirius XM.